This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Haru. I will be reading the business opinions and editorial sections of the Cincinnati Enquirer for Sunday, February 11, 2024. I will begin with the business section and read the following articles, time permitting. First article, Feds, high-end Ohio spa demanded workers repay training costs, sign non-compete details. That's by Alexander Coolidge of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Second article, going up, world peace bill to be joined by hotels, offices, and shops. That's by Julian Almendarez of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Third article, sports streaming deal with ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery. What it means for viewers. That's by Brett Schwattenbauer of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Fourth article, can I move money from my RIA to HSA? That's from Allworth Advice's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi. Fifth article, $1 million could be yours if Burger King makes your Dream Whopper idea a reality. That's by Amaris Encinas of USA Today. Sixth article, Kroger-Albertson merger faces big threat from lawsuits. That's by Alexander Coolidge of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Seventh article, Lincoln dealerships are changing dramatically. Here's why. That's from Phoebe Wall Howard of the Detroit Free Press. And I'll begin with today's cover story titled, How This Sixth Grader Went From Selling Lemonade to Owning a Full-Fledged Business. And that's by Grace Tucker of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Jordan Friend is a natural-born entrepreneur, all 4 feet 9 inches of him. Growing up, Jordan, a sixth grader at E.H. Green Intermediate School, mastered the typical kid hustles, lemonade and brownie stands, coupon book selling, then dog walking. He eventually graduated to web design. Soon after, he started asking his dad, Scott Friend, to help him achieve some of his grander business ideas, such as patenting a new tech gadget or opening a restaurant. Most ideas are things we as parents just can't help with, Scott said to the Enquirer. Then one day, Jordan landed on the perfect business idea. He wanted to launch an apparel company inspired by his favorite catchphrase, cool beans. What started out as a handful of bean sketches on August of 2023 has turned into a full-fledged Cool Beans apparel business. It has a TikTok account and a website that sells a variety of clothing designs featuring different Cool Beans characters. How Cool Beans apparel came to be. In the beginning stages of his business, the 11-year-old hired a graphic designer on Fiverr, a freelance services marketplace, to turn his drawings into digital designs for the apparel. Delegating tasks came naturally to the mini businessman. I like the idea to pay anyone anything to do anything, Jordan said. Jordan launched the brand with 4 bean character designs: Original Bean, Swimmer Bean, Cash Bean, and Music Bean. When I started out, I didn't have that many bean characters just because my budget was pretty low, he explained. As his business grew, he created new designs using ideas customers submitted through a form on his website. Now there's a bean for everybody, he explained. Baseball Bean, Climber Bean, Math Bean, Soccer Bean, and more. Like any true businessman, Jordan knows how to market his brand by pitching it to the right people. During a trip to Anna Marie Island, Florida, over the holidays, Jordan and his family stumbled upon a coffee shop called Cool Beans. Inspiration struck the sixth grader, who later called the owner of the shop, P. pitched his apparel brand and set up a meeting about making merchandise for the shop. Now the owner is placing his biggest order that Jordan has ever gotten, Scott explained. Then there was a time Jordan was watching a masterclass video on business negotiation while on a plane, catching the interest of the man sitting next to him. After hearing about Jordan's business venture, the man bought a Cool Beans shirt. Over the course of 2 hours, I acquired a new customer, Jordan said. Jordan has also found success advertising to his friends and classmates at school. He even reached out to his old principal at Sims Elementary School, securing a Cool Beans shout-out in the school's morning announcements in exchange for donating a portion of his profits toward the school's playground. As far as chief financial officer's duties go, Jordan is right on the money, literally. He created a rewards program on his website to appeal to his loyal customer base. It's a good way to incentivize people. It's kind of like a bank, said Jordan, who hopes to continue growing his business by using endorsements from YouTubers and creating more awareness on social media. So where does he save all his money, you ask? Most of my savings are in index funds, like the stock market, the middle schooler said. Jordan was asked, what is your dream job? I want to work in the field of synthetic biology, so I want to be a professor or something like that. But I also definitely see myself owning some businesses on the side. What advice do you have for other kid entrepreneurs? A lot of kids I know now have a couple hundred dollars saved, and most kids will spend that on Legos. But if you want, you can really just start a business. It's not like a money thing or a work thing. You just got to sit down, do it. It'll be pretty simple, actually. Who are your role models? I'm thinking of people, and then I think of the controversies they're involved in. So then I don't want to say them. I don't know if this person is involved in any controversies, but I'd say George Church. He did a lot with synthetic biology and revolutionizing it from CRISPR-9, a genetic coding material, to e-coding, the genome, and stuff like that. I just look up to business people like Bill Gates, my uncle, my dad. Our next article is titled, Feds, High-End Ohio Spa Demanded Workers Repay Training Costs, Sign Non-Compete Deals. And that's from Alexander Coolidge of the Cincinnati Inquirer. At Juvelee Aesthetics Health Spa, workers weren't allowed to discuss their pay, talk about their bosses or evaluations, even with co-workers. If they did, they could get fired and charged tens of thousands of dollars for the cost of training them. The National Labor Relations Board said the high-end spa was breaking the law. The Columbus-based company, with locations in Cincinnati and across the nation, has agreed to settle the labor dispute with three former employees and abandoned what federal officials deemed were unlawful non-compete practices. Prior to the settlement, the company had targeted three unidentified former employees with demands they pay up to $75,000 to cover the cost of training them before leaving the company, a practice that cuts off employees' ability to leave their job, the board's Cincinnati Regional Director Eric Taylor said in a statement. Employees were also forced to sign restrictive confidentiality, non-disparagement, non-compete, non-solicitation contracts that federal law officials deemed illegal and violated workers' rights. At least one of the three former employees worked at the company's downtown Cincinnati spa. Juvelee Aesthetics, different services range from $99 to $3,000 and include wrinkle relaxers, fillers, body contouring, microneedling, laser treatments, and skin care, according to its website. On the terms of the settlement, Juvelee agreed to pay two of the former employees more than $25,000 in back pay. It also agreed to post remedial notices in all 10 of its U.S. locations that inform employees of their right to discuss their pay, hours, and work conditions. The notice will also inform workers they won't be targeted for training costs if they leave the company. Training and repayment and non-compete provisions like these that in practice cut off employees' ability to leave their job interfere with employees exercising their rights, Taylor said in a statement announcing the settlement. Officials with Juvelee Aesthetics did not respond to multiple phone messages, emails, and website chat requests. Non-compete agreements have been targeted by the Biden administration, which claims they restrict competition for workers and depress wages. Our next article is titled, Going Up, World Peace Bill to be joined by hotels, offices, and shops. This article is written by Jolene Almendarez of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Real estate in Greater Cincinnati is booming. The Enquirer's Going Up series is here to introduce you to need-to-know development projects around the region. In Newport, the World Peace Bill has been in limbo for decades. Plans were announced in 2019, only to be derailed by the COVID-19 pandemic. Now Newport is borrowing millions to help kickstart part of the project. What you need to know. The address is the lot is surrounded by Monmouth 4th, 5th, and York Streets. The building type, two hotels, office space, retail shops, a parking garage, and possibly condos are set to be built on what's known as the World Peace Bill site. The two hotels would create about 40 full-time jobs and around 30 part-time jobs, according to Sean Pan, who owns the property. The hotels, Homes to Suites and True by Hilton Hotel, will be in one seven-story building with 207 rooms. The building will also have 2,000 square feet of retail space. The World Peace Bill, which is the largest free-swinging bell in the world, will stay where it is. The bell was made in Nantes, France, standing 12 feet tall and weighing 66,000 pounds. It rang for the first time in the United States at midnight January 1, 2000. The developer will keep the area around the bell a public space and also plans to add a stage to the area for public performances. The developer, Sean Pan, who also owns the Hampton Inn and Suites on Columbia Street in Newport, is developing the garage through World Peace Hospitality. North Shore Design is handling the architecture for the project. A developer for an office building slated for the site has not been announced. What's the latest update? City commissioners approved $16.5 million worth of bonds to go toward a roughly 400-space city-owned parking garage. An estimated 10% of those parking spots will be electric vehicle charging stations. Who will pay for it? It's complicated, but in general, the funds are coming from public and private pools of money. The World Peace Bill site is located in a Tax Increment Financing District, or TIF district. In such a district, projects can be paid for with tax money expected from future property tax increases. The plan is for the city to pay the bonds back using a variety of methods. That includes $4 million in TIF dollars from the state of Kentucky, payments in lieu of taxes from the planned office and hotels, and parking lot rentals. What's next for the parking garage? The look of the building, facade, color, etc., has not been decided. However, City Commissioner Ken Richton told the Enquirer that he will be pushing for a feasibility study soon to determine if housing can be built on top of the parking garage. Site preparation for the building has already begun. Construction on the garage is expected to start this summer. The project completion date is still to be determined. Our next article is titled Sports Streaming Deal with ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery: What It Means for Viewers. This article is written by Brent Strattenbor of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Three of the top television companies in American sports delivered a bombshell announcement Tuesday that said they were forming a joint all-in-one streaming service that will provide sports content from all the major pro leagues, plus college football, college basketball, and more. But what does that mean to the average sports viewer? ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery shared only some details of their agreement Tuesday. To gain a better understanding of it beyond that, USA Today Sports contacted sports business and legal experts about where this is headed, what it might cost, and how it will affect viewing habits. "It certainly is surprising," said Neil Pilson, former president of CBS Sports. He also called it a potential watershed moment. The companies otherwise are competitors with each other for viewers, advertising, revenue, and sports media rights, but in this case are joining to form a new streaming app scheduled to launch this fall, with each company owning one-third of it. What would it include? The joint venture would be offered directly to consumers and will include ESPN+, access to 14 linear networks, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPU, SECN, ACCN, ESP News, ABC, Fox, FS1, FS2, Big Ten Network, TNT, TBS, and True Television. What you get on these channels would be available on this app. That includes the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, WNBA, NHL, NCAA basketball, tournament games, and PGA Tour. Commercials would be included too. To me, this goes a long way to solving the sports dilemma that many viewers have, former Fox Sports Network president Bob Thompson told USA Today Sports. They would like to cut the cord to cable television, but if you are a sports fan, it is very, very difficult to do and get all of what you want. This goes a long way to remedying that situation. How much would streaming service cost viewers? It's to be determined, but Thompson predicted it could cost more than $40. The math would have worked for three companies that are paying huge fees to sports leagues for the rights to show the content. For example, ESPN, Fox, NBC, CBS, and Amazon are scheduled to pay the NFL more than $100 billion combined through 2033 for rights to broadcast NFL games on their networks. It would also have to take into account how the introduction of this streaming service will spur more viewers to ditch cable television, which has been a huge source of revenue for companies such as ESPN, the most expensive channel on cable television. Last year, ESPN took in more than $9 per subscriber from cable television, according to SP Global Market Intelligence. Why are they doing this? Much of the media business in general has struggled to monetize online content as consumers have cut the cord from expensive traditional cable television handlers and instead turned to wide and fractured array of streaming choices online. Disney, which owns ESPN, had been seeking a strategic partner for ESPN to help it navigate those choppy waters as its lucrative cable TV revenues decreases. They're agreeing with the predicament. They're agreeing with the prediction that the cable audience is going to continue to shrink, Pilsen said. By joining together online, they're also not competing against each other for subscribers and instead are sharing them. This has the added benefit of creating a streaming service that has all this content on one app instead of forcing viewers to subscribe to multiple services and toggle between them online. So this is just another cable TV style bundle? To the extent, yes. To a certain extent, yes. A subscriber will pay for a bundle of content from multiple channels, but it's not like the traditional cable TV bundle in which subscribers were paying for dozens of channels they didn't ask for and never watched. This is a skinnier bundle only for sports. Subscribers would also have the ability to bundle the product, including with streaming services Disney, Hulu, and or Max, according to the announcement. All of that could make it more attractive for viewers who pay big bills each month for cable TV. It could hasten the demise of the cable and satellite bundle now that there is a robust sports option in the streaming world, Thompson said. Is this even legal? That's up to the federal government to decide. Does it violate antitrust laws that prohibit monopolies and anti-competitive conduct? In this case, competitors are joining to sell their content together under one venture. Antitrust regulators would have to look at its structure and decide whether to intervene to protect American consumers and taxpayers. Regulators tend to get nervous when competitors enter into deals like this, but antitrust laws has always been a soft spot for sports, said Robin Feldman, professor at the University of California Law, San Francisco. Even if antitrust laws are implicated, regulatory agencies will likely try to factor in consumer interest in their decision. In this case, a new sports streaming platform could make life easier for the average sports fan. Consumers have been complaining about how difficult it is to watch various types of sports programs or even figure out how to watch them, Feldman told USA Today Sports. I know my family will be thrilled. The announcement also noted that the formation of this new pay service is subject to the negotiation of definitive agreements amongst the parties. Who is left out? NBC Universal, CBS, and their sports properties are not included, among others. So this new app won't include everything a sports fan might want to see. NBC is paying for rights to the Olympics through 2032 and NFL games on Sunday Night Football through 2033. CBS also has rights to NFL games through 2033, and this year will start broadcasting up to 15 Big Ten conference football games. The new streaming app also likely would not include men's basketball Final Four games on CBS, which alternates coverage of those games each year with TBS through 2032. What about linear TV? While revenue from cable or linear TV has been shrinking, it's still a big part of the business for these companies. The NFL also likes being on linear television to maximize its viewership. That's why Pilsen questioned whether the NFL and other sports leagues might have concerns about a streaming service that could accelerate the abandonment of linear or broadcast TV in favor of streaming. The NFL didn't immediately return a message seeking comment, but NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said this week he didn't envision a streaming-only Super Bowl happening during his tenure. One of the secrets of our success is we are really committed to broadcast television, he said. On Tuesday, the three companies announced a deal that raises questions about their own commitment to linear TV. They are placing their bet and business future on viewers who are going to take all of their programming from the streaming services, Pilsen said. Our next article is titled, Can I Move Money from My RRA to HSA? That's from Allworth Advice's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi. Every week, Allworth's Financials, Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi answer your questions. If you, a friend, or someone in your family has a money issue or problem, feel free to send those questions to yourmoney@inquirer.com. Our first question comes from Christy from Erlanger. I am currently saving in an HSA. I also have money saved in an IRA. Can I transfer money from the IRA to the HSA? And would I have to pay taxes on that? Answer. Just so we're all on the same page, HSA stands for Health Savings Account. This type of account comes with triple tax advantages. Contributions you make are tax deductible. The money inside the account can be invested and grow tax-free, and withdrawals are also tax-free if used for qualified medical expenses. You can also contribute to a HSA if you're enrolled in a qualified high-deductible health insurance plan. On the other hand, a traditional IRA is what's known as a tax-deferred account. This means while contributions you make are typically tax-deductible, like the HSA contributions, you'll eventually have to pay taxes on withdrawals. With all that said, you can roll over IRA money to an HSA account tax-free. Technically, this is called a qualified HSA funding distribution, or QHFD for short. But there are a few caveats. First, the IRS will only let you make this money move over during your life. Second, the money must transfer directly between IRA and HSA to be tax-free. Third, you can only roll up to the yearly HSA contribution limit minus what you've already contributed so far this year. Contribution limits for 2024 are $4,150 if you're single. Health coverage, $8,300 for family coverage, and $1,000 catch-up is allowed if the account owner is 55 or older. And finally, you have to be covered by a high deductible health plan when you make this rollover and must remain eligible for this plan for 12 months following the transfer. You'll pay a penalty and extra taxes if you don't. Here's the Allworth advice. Yes, you can make a QHFD as long as you follow all IRS rules. Talk with your HSA plan administrator as well. However, it wouldn't hurt to also consult with a fiduciary financial advisor or a trusted tax professional. He or she can help you determine if this is truly the best decision for your particular financial situation. Our next question comes from Karen from Butler County. Do my husband and I have a joint credit score? Answer. We understand how it could be easy to assume this, given married couples can have joint checking accounts and the option to file their taxes together, but a joint credit score does not exist. You each have your own individual credit report and credit score, though any joint accounts will impact you individually. However, even though you both have separate credit scores, doesn't mean those scores are independent of each other. If the two of you will be applying for a loan together, lenders typically will check both scores. So if one of you has a stellar score and the other doesn't, that poor score can impact the interest rate you receive. If this happens to be your situation, work to improve that lower score before applying for any loan together. The Allworth advice is that while both people in a marriage share a lot of things, a credit score is not one of them. Therefore, it's critical that you still take the time and effort to check, nurture, and maintain your individual score. You can see your score for free at credit.com or creditkarma.com. Now, responses are for informational purposes only, and individuals should consider whether any general recommendation in these responses are suitable for their particular circumstances based on investment objectives, financial situation, and needs. To the extent that a reader has any questions regarding the applicability of any specific issue discussed above to his or her individual situation, he or she is encouraged to consult with a professional advisor of his or her choosing, including a tax advisor and/or attorney. Retirement planning services offered through Allworth Financial, a SEC-registered investment advisor. Securities offered through AW Securities, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA/SIPC. You can visit them at their website, and that website is allworthfinancial.com, or you can contact them by telephone, and that number is 513-469-7500. That's 513-469-7500. Next, we have the opinions and editorials. Our first opinion is titled, City Council Needs a Ceasefire Resolution for Cincinnati, Not Gaza. Regarding the Sharon Coolidge article about a Gaza ceasefire resolution, maybe Mika Owens and Cincinnati City Council would be better served by proposing a resolution for a ceasefire within the city of Cincinnati instead of worrying about somewhere over 6,000 miles away. They may want to address issues closer to home before downtown turns into a war zone that nobody wants to visit and do business in. And that's from George Hurst of downtown. Our next opinion is titled, City Council Should Stick to Discussing Local Issues, Not War in Gaza. I watched this political drama unfold in Cincinnati's City Council chambers relating to a resolution on the Gaza war and frankly wondered what took so long for a confrontation like this to take place. On Wednesday, it did. To me, the real issue is elected officials who frankly preen for attention constantly and don't know when to stay in their lane. Wednesday and other resolutions leading up to it are examples of this. This is a local government at the most basic retail level. This is not an international body or forum with global influence. Far from it. Yet, they like to puff out their chests and strut their stuff whenever the opportunity presents itself. If members of council or the mayor wish to share their thoughts on such global issues, then write a contributor column and submit it to the Inquirer. They will be more than happy to provide a forum. In the meantime, follow the example of the mayor and some other members of council on Wednesday. Say nothing and stick to your knitting, as the saying goes, and stay local. I'll be looking for your global issue comments on the Inquirer editorial page. And that was written by Steve Dieters of Oakley. Our next opinion is titled, Create Fair District Maps That Give All Ohio Voters a Voice. The recent article about funding for the ballot initiative to end gerrymandering noted that efforts in 2015 and 2018 had bipartisan support. The Ohio Supreme Court, which has a Republican majority, has repeatedly rejected congressional and state house maps submitted by the commission formed after these initiatives passed. This isn't about party affiliation. It's about extremism. Politicians have proven that they do not have citizens' best interests in mind by repeatedly submitting gerrymandering maps. Sign the petition being circulated by citizens, not politicians, and do what our politicians refuse to do. Create fair districts that give all Ohioans a voice. And that's from Bridget Reuter of Liberty Township. Our next opinion is titled, Lakeeta Cole was a Cincinnati councilwoman. Then her abusive relationship took over her life. And this is written by Sharon Coolidge. Editor's note, this story has been updated to correct information about Chris Seelbach's position with the city when Lakeeta Cole was on city council. From the moment Lakeeta Cole pulled up to City Hall on her red motorcycle with a license plate sassy, it was clear she wasn't your typical council member. She'd gone to win 3 terms on city council, then nab a post with the powerful Public Utilities Commission of Ohio before settling into a job she loved at the Cincinnati Parks Department. What nobody could have guessed at the time she was leaving council, or well ever, was that Cole was being beaten, threatened, and controlled by her boyfriend, William L. Cromwell. Cole's lawyer said in court, that same woman who had helped scores of people through her work, was a woman in need of help, and her relationship would end up making her a criminal. In the summer of 2020, police in Indiana were implicating Cromwell in a fatal car crash. They wanted Cole to tell them where Cromwell was. She said she didn't know. They didn't believe her and arrested her on a charge of hiding a fugitive. Then she was accused of defrauding a government children's welfare agency by along with Cromwell, taking benefits she didn't qualify for because of her high-paying city job. Frightened, Cole knew what that meant. She would have to tell everyone what she had endured. How, she wondered, had it come to this? Her arrest shocked those who followed city politics. There's no inkling in those initial stories of what was going on behind the scenes. It's a difficult story to tell. Cole shared her story with the Inquirer in early 2023, shortly after she was sentenced to probation, but then changed her mind about going public. As she put her life back together as a single working mother, she said she's now ready to tell people what she endured. Cromwell is serving a prison sentence in Indiana unrelated to the abuse and declined to comment for this story. Cole shared photos of the abuse which she had taken of herself, but did not want to make them public. Still, she wanted to tell her story because she knew she's not the only hidden abuse victim. Cole, 50, was born in Lincoln Heights, a historically black community outside Cincinnati, where more than 60% of the residents live below the poverty line. Cole was raised by a single mother. Cole's father was only a sporadic presence in her life, but nothing was going to stop Cole from being the first person in her family to graduate from college or even to vote. She described it as growing up in the mud. Cole's family later moved to Cincinnati. She graduated from Aiken High School in 1991 and then went to Wittenberg College in Springfield, Ohio, where she earned a bachelor's degree in political science. After college, Cole returned to Cincinnati and worked in Cincinnati Public Schools. She also volunteered for popular longtime councilman Dwight Tillery's reelection campaign, which led to a chief of staff job, and then Councilman Paul Booth. She liked that job but realized the best way to make changes she wanted for the city was to run for council herself. She didn't have any money. She didn't have the Democratic Party endorsement. But in 2001, Cole ran anyway. She fell short by 1,589 votes. Undeterred, Cole took a job with the Cincinnati office that helped economically distressed communities and prepped up to run again in 2003. When Booth resigned before the election, Cole was appointed to the seat. Cole was 29. She championed bringing council members out into the community and led an effort to make recreation center pools accessible to kids who couldn't afford pool passes. She chaired council's budget committee. Chris Silbach, who worked at City Hall for Councilman David Crowley, said Cole was on council. Said he recalls Cole was smart and a champion for those she sought to safeguard and protect. When faced with challenges, Lakota never backed down, Silbach said. She was resilient, street smart, and able to get things done, overcoming any obstacle in her path. During that time, she earned a master's degree in public administration from Northern Kentucky University across the Ohio River from Cincinnati. In 2010, as her time on council was winding down, Cole was planning to run for state representative but dropped out of the race and resigned from city council to take the job at the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. The PUCO job was born from a political move among Democrats to avoid a contentious state house primary. But Cole said she took the job because the work intrigued her. Cole hated Columbus, though. She was single and living in the suburbs. Her friends from college were married and having kids. She was lonely. When John Cranley, who had served on city council with her, became mayor at the end of 2013, Cole briefly worked in his office and then moved to the Parks Department, where she was the human resources manager. In 2015, Cole was at a crossroads. She didn't mind that her council days were behind her, and she loved her new job. But she wondered, was she going to go through life alone? Enter Cromwell, whom she met through their local motorcycle clubs. Cromwell was gregarious, while Cole was reserved. Cromwell was a lot of fun and had tons of friends, something that drew Cole in. Cole was settling back into her life in Cincinnati. She was out of office, but people would come up to her and ask for help, as if she were still in a position of power. Cole never wanted to say no. That wasn't her life anymore. But she couldn't. Cromwell would shoo people away, giving her privacy. I felt like he accepted me for me and not the former councilwoman, Cole said. To Cole, he was protective and sweet. Now she knows Cromwell was controlling. They started dating in February of 2015. In March, they took a trip with Cromwell's friends to Daytona Beach. Cole wanted to leave, and Cromwell didn't, leading to a fight during which Cole said Cromwell beat her. Cole felt trapped, alone with his friends, and no way to get away. Back home, Cromwell promised to change. Cole believed him, but it happened again and again. Cole would take pictures of her bruises and send them to herself, though she never did anything with them. She'd write emails to herself, meant to be found, that said if she were found dead, it was Cromwell who killed her. But then she'd delete them when times were good between them. I thought it was me, Cole said. She'd think, why am I not married? I thought I was a good catch. Obviously, I'm not. I started believing what he said, Cole said. In text message after text message, Cromwell told Cole she was garbage. He told her she was ugly. He told her she was stupid. Don't nobody want you, Cromwell wrote in a text message showed the Inquirer. Raggedy fat hoe, Cromwell wrote, nobody will ever marry you, weird psycho. A.S.S., Cromwell wrote, Yet Cromwell did offer Cole something she thought she might never get, the chance to be a mother. Cole was already in her 40s. She has sickle cell disease, a painful red blood cell disorder, which is genetic. So, to have a child, her partner needed to be tested and committed to what would be a difficult path to get pregnant. Cromwell was all in. Cole thought it was a sign Cromwell did love her despite the beatings, despite the text messages. Cromwell didn't work. He lived with Cole, though there was never the marriage she dreamed of. Cromwell had 10 children from previous relationships. At some point, Cromwell added Cole's name to a child welfare claim without reporting Cole's $105,000 a year Parks Department salary. Cole signed the paperwork, a possible felony. Their son was born in 2017. The cycle of abuse continued. Their son grew from infant to toddler, starting to witness the fighting and physical abuse happening to his mother. I couldn't let my son think that this behavior was acceptable, Cole said. She kicked Cromwell out of her house. This was it. It was going to be over, she told Cromwell, mostly moved out. In July of 2020, Cromwell was driving an Infiniti QX80 on Interstate 65 in Indiana on his way home from a trip to Chicago when he hit a car that was stopped because it had just hit a deer. A 14-year-old girl was thrown from the car and died. Cromwell didn't have a valid driver's license, and he had cocaine in his system, court records would later say. But he wasn't immediately charged with a crime. Cromwell and Cole still talked, and Cole knew what had happened, but she didn't know about the drugs, so she didn't think it was criminal. She thought it was an accident. As for herself, Cole thought she was doing well. Cromwell was a good dad to his son, but that was the extent of their relationship. Cole came home from work the night of February 16, 2021, to find Cromwell had broken in. She told him to get out. He promised he was just picking up the last of his things. Cole left with her son and went to her mother's house so she wouldn't have the chance to convince her to get back together. The next morning at 7 a.m., the police came to Cole's mother's house looking for Cromwell. Cole said she didn't know where he was because she didn't. The police didn't believe her, but left to continue their search for Cromwell. Cole went to work at the Park District headquarters like it was just another day. At 2 p.m. in the middle of the workday, officers showed up and arrested her. Life as she knew it was over. It was, and it wasn't. Cole realizes she's not alone. Cole grew stronger each day that passed. She found solace in You Are Not Alone, a group started by Shannon Anderson Hammond, a Roselawn woman and personal trainer Cole knew through boot camp classes. Anderson Hammond suffered through an abusive relationship years ago and convened women in 2019 to let them know other women have troubles they find difficult to talk about. The group originally met in person, but now functions as a Facebook group. A member can now listen or read about what others are saying, and that's what Cole did. Through other women's words, she learned she was not alone. When you are going through things, you can feel like you are the only person facing the challenge, especially when it seems like everyone else is happy and smiling. Anderson Hammond said, "We tell people everyone has a journey." Cole grew braver. Recently, she told Anderson Hammond her own story. Justice comes in a courtroom. Cromwell, 50, pleaded guilty in December of 2022 to a charge of driving with a suspended license and causing a death. A judge sentenced him to 5 years in prison. He declined to comment through the official prison interview request process. he was not charged with domestic violence. He also pleaded guilty in Hamilton County Common Pleas Court in April of 2021 to a charge of tampering with records for his part in the child benefits fraud. He was sentenced to 18 months in prison. The judge also ordered him to pay $19,490 in restitution to Hamilton County Job and Family Services. Cole pleaded guilty in Hamilton County Common Pleas Court in January and February of 2023 in misdemeanor charges of attempted obstruction of justice and unauthorized use of property for fraudulently obtaining food and medical assistance. She paid $7,500 in restitution and was sentenced to a year of probation. In court, her attorney, Bill Gallagher, said Cole suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of battered woman syndrome. The woman in front of you today is different from the one that you saw when she was serving the city of Cincinnati, she told the judge. At that moment, nobody knew that more than Cole herself. "I'm back in the mud again," Cole told the Inquirer shortly after her conviction last year. "I've started all over. I had 2 degrees I'm still paying for, and I can't do anything with them. My name is mud now. The one thing I had, the only thing I had, I didn't have money. I didn't have anything. What do I have now? I don't even have a good name." Her attorney said Cole was caught between shame and believing every lie her partner told her. "The scientific literature is overwhelming about the effects of trauma on the survivors of domestic partner violence," said Hamilton County Prosecutor Melissa Powers. "This is why the law in Ohio has long recognized battered woman syndrome as a legal defense in certain cases." The prosecutor handling the case considered the abuse absolutely a mitigating factor in deciding to reduce felony charges to a misdemeanor, Powers told the Inquirer. "Being a prosecutor means more than just looking for convictions. It requires you to look at the entire case and circumstances to reach a just result. I am confident that happened here. Cole is not so different from others who suffer," said Christine Shriplin, president and CEO of Women Helping Women, an agency that serves survivors of sexual assault, stalking, and domestic violence in Hamilton and Butler counties. "This can absolutely happen to anyone," Shriplin said. "Executive or elected official or policymaker or a millionaire. It goes back to 1 of 3 women. It's not 1 out of 3 women of certain economic circumstances. Cole has been low before. She's had already climbed that hill. She will do it again." After her arrest, Cole started her own cleaning business, working to cleaning homes, apartments, salons, and short-term rentals. "It is a way to scrub her old life into oblivion. It is a way to vanquish the past, to get out of the mud." If you are currently experiencing abuse, please call or text Women Helping Women 24-hour hotline at 513-381-5610. That's 513-381-5610. Our next opinion is titled, "Nikki Haley Should Stay in the Republican Primary for as Long as Possible." "I sure hope Nikki Haley stays in the race for the Republican presidential nomination, if for no other reason than to drive Donald Trump bonkers. It must really irk him that she hasn't folded like the others with the I love you, Trump, and the smirky, awkward smiles. It makes you wonder if the other Republican candidates were really in it to win it or to be surrogates for Trump in attacking Haley. Only 15% of Republicans participated in Iowa. Why does Trump expect himself to be the automatic winner after only 2 states. There are still 48 states to go. Does he think campaigning and working for the nomination is beneath him? Does he expect an automatic coronation because he says so? The 91 indictments are not election interference, like he tries to claim. His running for an election is judicial interference as an excuse to stay one step ahead of the law. And that's from Diane Schuler of East Price Hill. Our next opinion is titled, It's Time for Churches to Rethink Their Message on Abortion. Now that issue one has been decided, I wonder if the churches who supported its defeat so vigorously have considered the consequences. One church role is to establish and promote a moral code and to persuade its members to follow it. Resorting to law to ban abortion tacitly admits their failure to do so. Perhaps it's time for churches to rethink the issue, not the righteousness or wrongness of it, but how they present it to their congregations, how they make their case. Clearly, the old way does not work. Abortion is a medical decision as well as a moral one and should not be decided by legislators with little or no knowledge of medical practice or complexities of health care. Perhaps that, not abortion, is why issue one passed. And that's from Robert Schneider of Walnut Hills. Our next opinion is titled, Republicans think the only voice that matters is theirs. I am now convinced that our voices will never count in the pseudo-anarchist state of Ohio, the only voices that need to be listened to, the state Republicans and governor. Not more than a few hours after issue one was passed by Ohio voters on November 7, Republicans let it be known that they would be working to weaken the constitutional amendment that won so many votes. Yes, see, we Republicans are the majority and know better than you voters what you actually need. Women's health care be damned. Care for miscarriages? No. Contraception or morning after pills? Just be sure you won't ever need an abortion or health care for miscarriage in the state of Ohio, where Republicans only respond to the anti-choice fringe that controls them. You could go to jail, or you could die. And that's from Monica Leary of Amelie Village. And that concludes the reading of the business, opinions, and editorial sections of the Cincinnati Inquirer for Sunday, February 11th, 2024. My name is Haru. This is Radio Reading Services. Until next time, be safe, stay positive, and continue taking care of yourselves and each other.